Did Bob McCowan just say what I think he said? You can rewind Primetime Sports Podcast when you subscribe at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports. Now. On the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It's Thursday, June the 23rd, 2016, and this is Primetime Sports. It's Canada's most listened to sports talk show on the Sportsnet family of networks. Greetings and salutations to y'all. I'm Bob McCowan. That's Arash Madani. And that's Terry Ryan over there. Do I have to say former first-round pick? Do I always have to say that?
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. Terry is now doing a variety of things. None of which I can mention because we have a family show here.
Good start.
His clothes do come off from time to time, but we won't get into that. We'll chat a little bit more about that in just a minute. The radio program has been, I was going to say in search of a new co-host, but the truth of the matter is we haven't been doing very much work at it. And yet, we have found one. We dusted off every nook and cranny, every crevice and closet. And the only thing we could find was Damian Cox. And so he joins us now to kind of preview this. So welcome back, Bob. I think.
It's all very flattering, every word you just said.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've worked together before, and that didn't last. Although, I thought we did a fine job, to tell you the honest to goodness truth.
Well, we'll try to do another fine job. That's what we'll do. And you know what? It's kind of cool that this is happening now because I think the three of us would agree. After some lean years, things are really happening in Toronto sports, you know, with the Raptors and the Blue Jays and eventually one would think the Leafs. So, you know, I mean, there have been great times it's always been a good time to be on primetime. But when the things are happening in the city, it's just that much better, as we all learned last fall with the Jays and that whole thing. So I think we're going to have a good time, Bob.
Well, let's not get carried away. I mean, this is an outstanding move for you because you get away from those idiots that run hockey at this network who haven't got a bleeping clue what they're doing over there. And as has been evidenced by all the news of late. So for you to escape from that mess is really an outstanding achievement. I mean, you got to be going out partying tonight to get away from those idiots.
I'm down here in Buffalo preparing for the draft with
you're with them.
I'm with them. So,
God, that's horrible.
This will be a little bit of a swan song out of the hockey thing. And, so you'll explain all these other sports to me again, how this all works, because basically...
Not much.
Very much like Arash. As, you know how Arash, how immersed he gets into his role in hockey and Hockey Night in Canada?
Pucks in deep, like time and space, pucks in deep. Here we go, boys, here we go.
Well, when should I prepare for your return? When does this happen? Monday?
I was thinking maybe Monday.
Oh, my God, really? I don't have much time then, huh?
So Monday and then every single day, after day after day.
Well, if my physician is listening, you're going to have to send an order over to Shoppers Drug Mart for Valium because I'm going to need it starting on Monday. And hopefully there's an ample supply because this is going to go on for an extended period of time, I suspect.
Yeah, well, and you know what the great thing is here, Bob?
Yeah.
This is exactly the welcome I was expecting. So I feel like I'm back home.
Well, we're happy to have you. so far. And Monday we'll have another assessment and see how we feel then.
We'll go day to day.
Day to day. That's all you can do. It's kind of like a marriage.
Upper body or lower body, Damien?
No, as Bob used to say to me, when you said it's kind of like a marriage, Bob, I've never been happier.
Never been happier. Welcome back.
Thank you, Robert. Aras, good to talk to you, and we'll see you guys very, very soon.
See you Monday. There's Damien Cox, who returns as the co-host of this program. He will work some, they tell me, 40 weeks a year at this job.
40 weeks with you?
Yeah, we went through this before.
You and Cox?
Yeah, we were. He was co-host for several years. And
did he do that many weeks, though?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then it morphed into another thing. And
right.
And I was never happy with that. So it's good. I have a lot of time for Damien. I respect him as a broadcaster and as a writer and as an analyst, and I disagree with virtually everything he says, but that's what makes the world go round. If we all stood on the same side, it would tip. So I will welcome him back with open arms starting on Monday. A little later, Paul Jones will join us, Joey Vendetta. Why is Vendetta on? Why are we talking to him? He was here last week. He's got a surprise? Oh, okay. Doug Mitchell of Calgary Sports Tourism Authority and former CFL commissioner will be with us.
It's a really good surprise, too. I know what it is.
Well, how do you know?
Well.
Oh, because it's a surprise to me.
Right.
That makes sense. Cliff Floyd of the MLB Network, Terry McCaig, director of baseball at UBC. They've churned out some players who have been drafted. And former NHL general manager, now with the NHL Network, Brian Lawton will all join us. And Terry Ryan is in studio. Let me reiterate, former NHL first round pick.
You know, you can, you just said, should you introduce me as that every time? It's up to you. It's up to you, Bob. You know, you can say author, actor, whatever you want. Former whatever. Falls under a
failed hockey player.
Failed hockey player. I don't mind that anymore. I embrace it. What am I going to do? It means I was a hockey player, right?
You got to do what you got to do. And you are who you are.
Hey, it's almost draft time. You think I don't hear that this time of year?
You pay any attention to the draft anymore?
Yeah. I keep, just as a hockey fan, you know, I pay quite a bit of attention. I mean, especially the teams I used to play on and things like that. But, you know, as far as a moment in my life that I'd have to say is one of the things that, outside of anything family-wise or whatever, like it, I look back and I might have had a bit of, you know, the situation in Montreal got a little bit tumultuous, I guess, at a point, but that's a
singular.
Well,
let me take you back. Let me take you back to this time on the day of your draft year. So it's a few hours before the draft.
Yeah.
Who are you with?
I was with my parents, my minor hockey coach, Durham Connolly, and a couple of friends. We had breakfast. And
what was your expectation of what was going to happen that day?
I didn't expect to go to Montreal. There was 26 teams, I think, and 22 or 23 had interviewed me, and they hadn't. I thought I was rated 19th in January in North America, but I had a big all-star game. I was MVP of the all-star game, and I had a fight against Brian Barrett, who was rated number one. Back when, you know, that meant something. It would probably be a little bit of a knock now. But it was in the all-star game. I don't know how many fights have been in the all-star game. The prospects game, different, but the all-star game that year. And so my ranking went up. I had a good playoff, 27 points, I think, in the playoffs. And
so what did you think?
I was going to Boston at the highest, number 9, and with a name like Ryan and the way I played. Ryan being Irish, saying, you know, not like any other connotation there. And then I had a great meeting with Dallas at number 11. They flew me to Toronto, actually, to do some further testing, and it went really well, mental more than anything. There's all kinds of tests. These guys, you might hear about the combine, but there's all kinds of mental, you know, and anything from, what's that test called? Where you the Warsaw test, maybe, or the you know?
Don't look at me.
You look at a picture, and you, what do you see here? You know, there's about 2 hours of that. And then, like, the type of question, if a train is leaving from point A at this speed and another one's leaving from point B at this speed, when will they meet? And, you know, and then...
What year was this, Terry?
That was 95.
No kidding. It's changed a lot in 20 years.
Well, yeah. So the picture test is a Rorschach test.
Rorschach test.
Yeah. That's where you look at the picture and what do you see?
What do you see?
And the answer always is butterfly.
Well, I would just always say if there was four, I remember there was four guys together on one of the pitchers and they were kind of
Beatles.
Hung together.
Those would be Beatles.
I just always said it's a team and this one guy's sticking up for everybody else. You know, at some point you realize who's interviewing you and you try to go with, you know, the best answer possible. There's only so many things. Like you're 18, you're not even really a man yet. You know, you haven't had many experiences other than hockey and growing up and you know, you might be interested in some things, but, you know, if I could take the same test 7 years later, all the answers would have been different. I was purely trying to impress the scouts and a lot of time just saying, what would they want me to say?
What do they want you to say as opposed to what you want to say? So you're a few hours before the draft. You're thinking maybe 9 to Boston. Where's Montreal draft?
8th.
8th.
Yeah, I had no idea. And I just totally went off topic. Sorry about that. But
No, so...
Yeah, yeah.
So now you start, now you're there. You're in the...
I'm there, but the thing is, in the elevator on the way there, I got in the elevator with my father, and Doug Robinson was in there from the Canadians. He's the head scout.
Okay.
And he congratulated me on a great year. Said, you know, you play tough, you score some goals, you get some penalty minutes. And then he said, great job in the Memorial Cup. And I went, what? I looked at my dad, and he said, he thinks you're Shane. I said, okay, thanks a lot.
He thinks you're Shane.
I shook his hand, and about a half hour later, they drafted me.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So he knew who you were.
Well.
You think.
He knew who I was on paper.
Yeah.
I have to say that anything with my... No,
so you
no
were
offense
shocked,
again,
right?
It was, by the way, it was one of the single best days of my life. That's a singular memory. Everything that happened with Montreal after, most of which was good. There's the bad stuff got public. But I really enjoyed that day. It was a great day. My friends, it seemed like everything I worked for came to fruition. My parents were... By many people at home, by many people and fans and some of the reporters or whoever it might have been at the time, there was a balance. A lot of people thought that they took me away at too early of an age. I was 14 when I left, and they might have had a point, some of them. I was 14. I went to junior A in BC. I got in a fight in my first game before I ever threw a hit. I was in Pee Wee a few months before that. And that was a big, I mean, I handle it well. I don't think a lot of people could. I know my parents knew that I could. That's why when I speak at some of these events, I'm doing some public speaking up here now, and if it's ever kids and they say, well, what should I do, go to college or major junior? When should I go? The answer is different for everybody. For me, that worked. Looking back on what I went through, man, I had 222 penalty minutes my first year. I was 14, first year bantam. I led the team in scoring, largely because I had really good, tough teammates at that point. And I get the way the game is going, by the way. I'm not trying to say fight, fight, fight. But at the time, it also helped me with the ladies at school, if you want to be honest.
There you go.
There you go. So, I went out there a virgin. I'd never, you know, played a game of junior hockey. All these guys have been drinking for years, and most of them are 18 to 21. I had to fit in, so I did what I could to fit in. And, you know, whatever. I don't think everybody could adjust to that. Not that I'm, you know, at the time any different. I was an only child, I guess, and I did what I could. And for a couple years I spent in junior A, they were tough years.
Montreal drafts you. Are you shocked or just
shocked.
Mildly surprised?
Shocked.
Totally shocked.
Well, A, they were my favorite team, right? So I was waiting for them to interview me, and they didn't.
And they didn't?
No. So I didn't think that I would.
They were interested.
They were interested. I talked to Pierre Mondeau afterwards, and Pierre told me that he watched me significantly over the course of the year.
But they didn't let you know they were interested.
No. And I remember a couple times knowing that they were in Tri-Cities, and I tried to impress Montreal scouts. Like I said, they were always our favorite team. Grew up, you know, any idol of mine that played hockey, it would... If I liked a scorer, you know, Guy Lafleur, he was slightly before me, but not that much. 5-6 years old, he was still playing. You know, the tough guy I liked was Chris Nyland. I just watched all those games. Largely, you know, my father did and my friends for the most part. And they were my favorite team, so I didn't think so at all. And as I was going to the draft, I mean, you read every day. They tell you not to read, but you're 18, you're loving it. You're opening the paper every day.
Sure.
It's you know, these facts and... You know, you read the pros and the cons, and it also helps you figure out what kind of player you are because you don't really know that. I thought I was a good skater till I read the draft write-ups. And, you know, I thought San Jose, I think, picked 12th, Dallas 11. I thought they're one of those for sure. Boston, hopefully I go in the top 10. 19.
Well, let me ask you this. How do you think your life might have been different had Boston taken you at 11 instead of Montreal?
At 9.
At 9, rather.
I would have played more. This is not a knock against the Montreal organization, nor is it, I'm not saying that Boston did things the absolute right way, but Kyle McLaren went 9th, and I played against him in Tacoma, and Kyle was a work in progress, but they took him for the full year, and I remember someone saying...
He played in Boston his first year?
His first year. He was out of all of us. I mean, I think even Berard went back to junior, right?
Brian?
Yeah. Two would have been Redden. Redden came back to junior for at least a little bit. Aki Berg, I'm not... Then Kilger, 4th. Lankow, 5th. He came back to junior. Steve Kelly, Doan. Doan went right to the show. So there wasn't that many. So... And Kyle McLaren, of all those guys, was drafted. He was big, tall guy on potential. Kind of like Logan Brown this year, 6'6", I think the guy is, 222. Really? Now, I do have confidence he's going to be good. He's good now in 6'6". Like, you know, size does matter sometimes. But, you know, Kyle was lanky. He hadn't grown into himself. As far as Western League defensemen went, he was probably, overall, you know, you'd play some... In the 20s, he wasn't like the best defenseman in the league or anything, but he was a work in progress. He was focused, and that's all they wanted. I don't know how many games he played that first year, but I know he never came to junior. So as an 18-year-old, he was in the show, and as a 19-year-old. I guess I wish that looking, I think Boston would have given me a chance to fail. Here's your games. There's 200 of them now. Go out, impress, entertain us. If you don't, you're gone. Whereas... most of that impressing in the Montreal organization was in the minors.
So the Montreal Canadiens, as you mentioned, Nylund, I mean, they weren't immune to having tough guys.
Yeah.
But do you think they drafted you because of your physical presence or because of your goal-scoring ability?
I think it was a decent mix. I remember them bringing up Rick Tocchet, you know, not that, again... I'm not comparing myself to Rick Tocchet, but at the time, in relative terms, in junior, I was that kind of player. I had 50 goals. I also spent 207 minutes in the box. And in the Western League, 10 minutes misconducts weren't counted at that time. We're the only league because they tried to discourage fighting. We didn't even warm up with the other team. There was a lot of tough guys, a lot of big, tough farm boys.
But do you think...
In today's NHL, would you be drafted in the first round?
I don't know. I left as a scorer. I often talk about that too much. And I put the emphasis on fighting. You know, I fought a lot of times. I wasn't even mad. I just did it. I knew there was scouts there. There's always a reason. Wade Bielak comes into town. He's the toughest guy in the league. If I take him on, it's obviously going to give our team a boost. But in pro, yeah, it started the pendulum swung too far the other way. I mean, I left as a scorer. I was drafted into the Western League in the third overall. If I didn't get in one fight, that wouldn't have changed. I was rated the best player at the Quebec Pee Wee tournament. That wasn't out fighting. And again, I had 50 goals as a 17-year-old. Who are these guys in the draft? A lot of them, how many of them every year have 50 goals in their draft year? Not many, right? And that wasn't fighting. I was decent at it. I was a good middleweight, and I wasn't afraid of it. And often, later I went in my career, the more I was called on to do it. But
I just wonder whether Boston might have been more amenable
maybe
to you being a physical player. At least early on,
maybe.
Than the
but
Montreal
see, the guys
Canadiens.
Who drafted me, Jacques Demers and Serge Savard, they got fired. And I think, you know, because they had an idea in their head. They got fired right away, right? So then I came in, and even Mario Tremblay gave me his number, number 14. Now, I wanted to wear it because my buddy Todd Klassen got killed in a car accident in Tri-Cities, you know, right before my 16-year-old camp. But as a 15-year-old, I would stay with him on the road. I mean, he was a friend. And I started to Todd Klassen or one of the people, myself and Dean Tilchin, to start the Todd Klassen Memorial Fund. If I scored a goal in junior, some kid, well, they would collect money and it'd go towards the Todd Klassen Memorial Fund. So as a 16-year-old, I had 16 goals, and then I started it then. So all these businesses got on board. Okay, 16 times whatever. And the next year I had 50, so it was magical.
Yeah, they got
burned. But it still goes on, too, in Tri-Cities, the fund. And I wanted to wear it, but I tell that story, but a lot of times, you know, Mario Tremblay wore it, and he was the coach that came in. He gave it to me. So, you know, if that hadn't happened, maybe Montreal would have been the perfect fit. I got nothing at all against Rajon Houle. He came in, and I guess I wasn't in his plans as much as the other guys. And And, you know, maybe they had a longer... I was pissed off at the time. Like I said, I had 21 goals and 34 fights my first year in Fredericton. And I shouldn't have ever gotten in that many fights. It was a rough time in the American League, too, and we didn't have a lot of tough guys, and I just ended up doing it, but that's a lot of things at once here. But, yeah, I don't think it was necessarily the Montreal organization. What ended up happening after I was there, they wanted me for a reason at the time, and the guys they drafted before me, Brad Brown, Turner Stevenson, you know, Darcy Tucker, these kind of guys, they picked Aaron Asham the year after me, but they were still there. Like, they wanted that kind of player for a point, and then their whole game plan changed.
You know what your story sounds like?
I'd love to hear this.
Nick Kiprios' story.
Well, except Nick has a Stanley Cup and played hundreds of
games
in the NHL.
But Nick was a scorer in junior hockey, which people don't remember. I don't remember. How many goals did Nick get? 100 goals in major junior hockey? Something close to that?
Okay, that qualifies. That's a scorer.
I think he had a 50-goal season.
Okay.
Maybe 60.
There you go.
We're going to just check on the stats here to get
you know.
Them.
So when along the way does that happen? When and how do you go from a dude who's a goal scorer, who was an offensive threat, who helped your team win, to suddenly be the guy that you're there for the fists?
When circumstance calls, and I don't think I was ever there purely for the fists other than those 8 games in Montreal.
Let me give you some nats and some stats here on Kiprios, sure. Just to put it in context. 3 years of junior hockey, goal totals, 41, 62, 49. The last year, 49 goals in 46 games.
Okay, so...
he could score.
That's legit, yeah. I didn't realize that. Not taking any credit away. I respect the guy.
No, but it's interesting, as I listen to your story, and we've talked on many occasions, and we haven't really gone through it like this way.
Yeah, you're right.
But now all of a sudden I see, okay, and what does Nick Kiprios do when he gets to the pros? He has to fight.
It's a safety net, though, as well. I knew I could do that, and another guy couldn't. I thought I'd get a chance. Patrick Poulin, who I was fighting for a job in Montreal. He had a bit high profile coming in. I think he came over in the Tucker trade. But he couldn't fight. And I thought, I got to be honest, I looked at him and said, I'm as good as that, and I can drop the mitts. So I just thought it, and maybe that was cocky as a kid. I don't know. And I was a team player. But to get back to what you were saying, now, I go on these programs, and I try not, like, I get it. And I don't know if I would have been an NHLer. I think I could have been a regular shift guy. If things worked out, I didn't end up getting hurt and all that stuff, and I didn't hold out, and I didn't make bad decisions. But to put in perspective, so when I was 18, I was going through a bit of a concussion, so I made Montreal and played only 3 games till February. I got sent back to Red Deer. In Red Deer, I played 33 games. I had 32 goals. It's the only team I never. Wow. It's the only team I've never fought as a member of. I went back, and they were there to protect me. I had a concussion. Well, they were there to be teammates, not to protect me. But, you know, it was a very tough team, and that was part of the decision. I remember Reggie coming in and saying, where do you want to get traded to in junior? B.J. Young, God rest his soul, it was one of my best friends. Aaron Asham, I knew when they drafted him, he played there, and a lot of other tough guys, Mike Brown, Lloyd Shaw, Devin Francon, Lance Ward. I can go down the list. And so they figured that would be a good environment. I never mixed it up at all. And, again, I had 18 goals in 16 games in the playoffs. I think that set a record in Red Deer, and I believe 14 in the regular season, or 15. I ripped it up. I had a goal a game. If that's on the year, I was on pace for 70-odd goals, which is insane. I don't think that would have happened, but I was, you know, I would have gotten 50 that year probably. So I remember thinking, yes, you know, it wasn't in my head. Like, I don't need Damon Lankow, and I'm here at Love Lanks, by the way, but that was what a lot of people were saying. He wouldn't have got 50 otherwise. But I could score, you know, and so I sit here, ironically, sometimes and defend fighting. But had it not been a thing, I probably would have played a lot more games in the NHL. To go back to what you were asking earlier, Arash, about would I have gone in the first round? I don't know. I think it's hard to compare eras.
Yeah.
The kind of player that they wanted me to be, I don't know, would go in the first round now. What's the guy's name last year? Lawson Kraus. Sometimes they say... I know Kachuk's in there now this year, rated 4th or 5th. Sometimes they say these guys, well, but he fights sometimes and got a mean streak. That's almost swaying to be a bad thing. Whatever side of the argument that you're on, that's fine. I think there's something to be said for competitiveness, but I fought way too much in a lot of situations.
Why?
Well, 34 as a middleweight, I led the whole American League. why. A lot of it was Michelle Therrien. I'm not going to sit here and blame, but he loved, well, he definitely made it clear that he wanted me to do that. And I was good at it. Until I got to the American League, I wasn't fighting heavyweights on a regular basis. I was in junior. It was a story when I fought Wade Bielak. 6 months later, it was expected. And I don't know.
Did you get trapped then?
Yeah. Had I known I wasn't going to play any longer, I thought at some point I'd be in Montreal and be on the power play. Okay? I thought so for sure. And on the way there, A, I got a mean streak anyway. I would have gotten in 10 to 15. But
all right. So it was in you.
It was in me. It was in me. In the game at the time, a lot more people were looking for it, and I didn't enjoy my teammates being taken advantage of. Again, that comes something to be comes into me play being me being an only child. Sorry for the marbles in my mouth. And you know, at 14, when I left Newfoundland, like I said, I'm an only child. They became my brothers, and so wherever I was, my teammates, and I'm from Newfoundland, so I was always alone. Right, like I don't mean that in a lonely, oh, I'm sitting here sucking my thumb alone. I mean that, you know, any night that I had nothing to do in the West or wherever, even in the summers, I'd spend at Edmonton, I'd go over and hang with one teammate or another. So a lot have become real good friends of this day. And then 2 days from now, I know I'm going off here. If you got to cut me off, fine.
In a minute.
2 days from now, I'm going out for dinner with a guy named Tran Sandwith, great friend. Played 8 games in the NHL just like me with Edmonton. But I remember in St. John's, he came in and he fought Laroque for me. Laroque hit me from behind. We were on the St. John's Maple Leafs. And, you know, and to see a teammate, you know, take punches in the face for you, it's this instant gratification that you don't get in an office building or anywhere else. You kind of, and again, whether you're for or against fighting, I just mean hockey's so physical that you get to see people really, you know, you get to see what they're all about immediately, and friendships can be made immediately. And a lot of times those guys became my brothers. Cause I'm like, geez, you know, I know a lot of people that wouldn't take punches in the face from George Laroque for me. And so I wanted to return those favors. I loved being a good teammate. So like I said, I would have gotten in 10 to 15. Yeah. I didn't enjoy that tap. Go get them, which happened a few times, but you know, I won't go there because I do wish Michelle Therrien the best. I really do. It was a long time ago. He was a rookie coach. And I wasn't easy to deal with, I guess, as a player sometimes. If I had a problem, I don't remember having many problems, but I told him where to go a few times.
So whoop. No, that doesn't help.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anything to promote? You doing anything? You playing anywhere? You're doing a bit in a movie that nobody can see.
Yeah, you know, the tales of a first round nothing, I guess. And I'm public speaking quite a bit now. I'm getting some calls. Oh, yeah? I need an agent or something. I don't know what to do with this. If there's anybody out there that wants a public speaker and talk about hockey or my book or whatever, because the stand-up that I'm doing has morphed into that. Up here, I'm doing a bit of both now. So who knows? I got to get an agent or something.
I heard the stand-up in Oshawa with Jerry D was pretty good.
It was all right, man.
My wife was there.
I feel like I'm insulting the stand-up community because it's a long time. You might have 20 years and not be able to get out of a bar. I know that. I know I'm unpolished. All I'm really doing is yakking about hockey stories. That's all I'm doing.
She enjoyed
but
it.
In a place, well, thank
for
you.
What it's worth.
Thank you. I know I'm rusty, but I'm learning, and Jerry's given me that opportunity. And, you know, what better? And I'm promoting hockey the whole time. We played in Halifax the other night, and my whole thing was a Cam Russell story, and, you know, it was great. We went out to dinner later, and you meet so many hockey fans. I didn't expect that would happen with stand-up, but I guess the crowds that we've been playing for have been great.
Terry Ryan, in studio. Great to see you. Thanks a lot, pal. Come back
to
see us again
now that
you're in town again.
So that's it. Now I'm here.
You're a Torontonian.
Yeah.
When we come back, the Toronto Raptors with picks number 9 and 27 in the NBA draft. We'll talk to Paul Jones about it when Primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Get this straight before we start. NBA draft tonight, NHL draft tomorrow?
Yep.
Okay. Whew, God. Let's talk about the NBA draft because it's tonight. Because if we talk about it tomorrow, it'll already have happened. We can't speculate. There's our friend Paul Jones, the radio voice of the Toronto Raptors. Hello, Jonesy.
How you doing, Robert? I am on my way down to the draft show, but right now at a teacher retirement at the home, one of the homes of the Canadian Open, Angus Glen.
Oh, my goodness. Well.
And what I wouldn't do to get out of this monkey suit and get out there and, like, slam it down the fairway.
There you go. Good luck. The 9th and 27th picks in the draft are held by the Toronto Raptors. There are those that believe the Raptors are trying to trade number 9 and may or may not be successful. Do you believe that to be true?
I would definitely believe that to be true. And if I had my druthers, that is exactly what I would do. If you're depending on a young player now, not the time. I mean, Toronto was one of two teams to win games from Cleveland in the NBA playoffs. Only two teams did that. Cleveland, Golden State won 3, Toronto won 2. You are at the stage now where you're trying to do what everybody else is trying to do, and that's beat LeBron James.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to do it with a kid that you draft that's wet behind the ears that might have played 30, 35 games of college or 30, 40 games in a pro league in Europe or something like that. Or even a senior that's played 4 seasons of college. That's not happening. You take that pick, you put it with somebody on the current roster, trade it away, free up some money, and go get somebody to try and get better and get past Cleveland.
The guy you want is...
The window is open now, Bobcat, and it doesn't stay open for a long time.
No, the guy you want is a 4, presumably, and are there names out there on existing rosters that you believe can fill the requirements that the Raptors would have for a 4?
Oh, there are names out there, but it's just a matter of can you get them, can you afford them, where you go with the salary. I mean, like I said, you're trying to beat LeBron James. If you want a guy who's a 3/4 stretch guy that can play out there and that can help you win, you look for. Look, here's a name for you, Paul Millsap. Here's a guy. I love his game. The guy was a 47th pick overall. Has made himself into an all-star. There's one name. I'll give you that name as a guy, but. I don't know. He's probably around 15, 20 million. I don't have the numbers in front of me. So how do you finagle that to get him on your roster? But
I don't know. Well, I mean, you have a new cap. You have a new cap number. And Ujiri sat in the studio and told us that MLS has told him some time ago that they give him permission to go over if necessary.
Well, then you have a green light, I suppose. And the 9th pick will free up some money. And you look at guys currently under contract that you could throw their money into a deal and provide an upgrade to get better, and away you go. Bob's your uncle, and you take your shot at trying to beat LeBron. Like I said, they've worked a long time to get the window where it is. It's open now. Jump through before it closes.
Jonesy, you package T-Ross and the ninth overall pick. What do you get back?
I think you might even have to throw in more, Arash.
Really?
I don't know.
Depends on the 27th pick overall, because if you don't need a young player at 9, you don't need one at 27.
Well, hold on a second now. You don't want to leave the cupboard totally bare. And if you do your homework, you can get a guy who might turn out to be as good at 27 as you do at 9, and you bring him along. You let him, like Norman Powell, a second-round pick, and DeLon Wright, who was picked 20th, you let them develop in a winning environment where they don't have the pressure on them. Winning and developing are tough to do. But if you can let that kid play in the D-League, be around, a winning culture, develop in that sense, then you take that kid at 27 because you don't want the cupboard totally bare. And I know that Masai values young players. He's also much cheaper. Like I said, if you do your homework, hey, Scola, 58th pick. Ginobili, a 57th pick. Tony Parker, a 30th pick.
Draymond.
Corey Joseph, a 30th pick. I mean, all from the same organization who are always seemingly picking late in the first round because they have success, but they find guys, and that's where your scouts have to do their work.
So you wouldn't trade 27?
I think 9 will get you more.
Much more.
I mean 9 and 27. I mean, I see. I think there's enough youth in the organization that they can afford to skip a draft. I mean, I'm really with you, except I'm prepared to go all in. I'm prepared to say, if you find the guy that you think can be that four, that missing ingredient, and you believe that with a new salary cap and the luxury tax leave that MLSC may have given you, then you go for it. Then you make that run. And if it's going to cost you 9 and 27, who cares? I got four or five guys who aren't going to be able to play for this team next year anyway.
And I hear you with that, Bobcat, because I think one of the most overrated things that we talk about is building for the future. The Raptors had built for the future. They built for the future. And look where it is now. The future is right now. They're at the point where, as I said, they're one of two or three teams trying to beat LeBron James. And the future is now. So, hey, if 9 and 27, I mean, personally, I try to hold on to maybe one of them. You might be able to throw that guy into a deal at the trade deadline. But at the same time, I'm with you, though. If that's what it costs and you can get the guy you want, then go for it.
So be it. Yeah. Take a shot. Who's going number one?
Ben Simmons. It sure looks like Philadelphia is going to take him number one.
Do you buy into it all, Jonesy, the report that Simmons didn't want to go to Philly?
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. I mean,
why would you want to go there? Look at the performance over the last 3 years.
Here's the thing, Arash, and I used to get really excited about the draft until you realize that if you draft a kid and if you develop him in the pro game and teach him the pro game, he'll help you in 4 years. And that's if he's a senior. That's if he's a kid who's played three or four years at a place like Kansas or Duke or North Carolina or Kentucky. I mean, or you get a kid like Damian Lillard out of Weber State or C.J. McCollum, who are seniors. They develop quicker because they've been taught the game, and then they learn the pro game. When you're a kid like Simmons, 1 year in college, he's 1 year removed from AAU. He barely, like, and I don't say this disrespectfully, he barely understands the game.
I guess the lone guy recently that just jumps off the page is Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
But he's a freak, right? He's long and he's you know, athletically so gifted, and he's a smart basketball player. But beyond that, there are so many, you're right. Kyrie Irving finally came into his own this year. How long did it take for Raptors fans to see DeMar 1 year, you know, he was a one and done out of USC.
Right. And if you're patient enough with them and you draft the right guy and you develop them, you're okay. But the way things turn over in this day and age and how quickly guys are declared boom or bust, I mean, ESPN has guys not only as all-star potential, but they have bust potential on these guys and percentages too.
Sure.
So it's a crapshoot more than ever now, just because of all the young guys that are involved.
You know what's amazing too, guys? I was looking it up. Kyrie Irving's draft year, he went first overall to the Cavs. And he left after his freshman year at Duke, and he was injured for most of it. Taken 21st overall in that draft, Nolan Smith, a senior at Duke, who played all 4 years at Duke, went in the same draft 20 spots after Kyrie. The night Kyrie Irving hits the game-winning shot over the Golden State Warriors, Nolan Smith's now an assistant coach under Coach K for the Blue Devils. It's amazing, just, you know, within 20 picks of number one overall, how different your paths can go. And why the currency is so different on the value of what the ninth overall pick is worth and what 27 is worth.
Well, the dilemma you face now is, see, it's very easy for people to say, based on, you know, some of the things that have been said here tonight or today, that you're better off to draft a senior. You know, as Jonesy said, you know, they are mature, they are older, they are more mature, they are more experienced, they will assimilate the pro game quicker. All that is true. But the reason, here's the downside, the reason that they are seniors is because nobody wanted them when they were freshmen. They weren't good enough as freshmen to be drafted, or likely as sophomores, or likely as juniors. So you got to be careful. And I understand the dilemma that NBA general managers go through in saying, I don't really want to draft an 18-year-old snot-nosed punk, and I don't know what I'm going to get when I draft him, and the risk is really high. But what's the choice?
Well, look,
the high the high ceiling guys are all going to be taken after 1 year, aren't they, James?
Absolutely. Bobcat?
They're all going to be taken.
You're absolutely right, because the draft is all on potential. It's all on what might be, what could be. And they're drafting for, you know, the ceiling or what it might be. But there's nothing wrong with drafting a four-year player. Never anything wrong.
No, as a piece, you're right.
As a piece, and again, in the right situation. Look at Norman Powell this year.
Yeah, the jury's still out long term on Norman Powell,
but he did a nice job,
and he elevated his game. He went down to the D League. He came back up. He got a chance to play. He didn't embarrass himself. All that's true, but we don't have any idea what his ceiling is.
No, you don't. But he's further ahead now than look at Bruno Caboclo. Who's further ahead now?
No doubt about it.
2 years away from being 2 years away.
Yeah.
And now he's, you know, he's probably a year or two away. I mean, let's face it. So I'm okay with drafting a 4 year player. If it's the right situation, if you, in a situation like this, where Toronto has a guy that, develops in this winning culture, it makes it very, very different.
I don't want to get off on my pedestal here again. I've made it very clear what I think of the Canadian NBA players who have rejected Canada basketball and their ambitions to qualify for Rio, although it's a long shot, although it's a terrible trip to the Philippines and then back to Rio if you do qualify. I get all that. I just think it's embarrassing for the program to have guys bail for really no good reason other than I just don't want to. And I think it's important to send memos to all of them and say this: DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry will both play for the U.S. Olympic team in Brazil in August. So, point of difference? You bet there is. And I understand that maybe DeRozan and Lowry aren't exactly at the top of the food chain, but here's two guys who play in Toronto, weren't born here, but play in Toronto, who I think are honored and feel privileged to be able to represent their country.
Yeah.
While we have guys who are worried about themselves and not Canada basketball.
But outside of weekends, Bob.
I think there's a difference there. I think that here's the difference, Bob. As you said, your key line in there was they're not the top of the food chain. They're not. Like Durant, LeBron, some of those guys that are have succeeded, given up the opportunity, and guys like Lowry and DeRozan are taking advantage of it. In Canada, our guys are wired differently. And look, if you listen to Mark Cuban, he wouldn't have any of his guys. Popovich says it regularly in San Antonio to Parker and Ginobili. Like, you're not playing this year for Argentina.
And Kawhi Leonard just pulled out today.
Because I need you. I'm paying you $10 million a year. What are you getting for them? And that's one of the issues it's one of the issues here, Bobcat. Sadly,
yeah, well, don't go after. Yeah, I mean, I appreciate that, but don't go after these players and then be surprised when they say no. You know, put together a bunch of amateur players and, you know, try and have some success that way. Well, just abandon the NBA concept. We got to go, Jones. Music's playing. The band is playing. The dancers are dancing. The singers are singing. And we got two more hours to fill. God love us. Joey Vendetta, Doug Mitchell, Cliff Floyd, and others coming up. This is Primetime.